Welcome to Landlord Diaries, where we talk about midterm rentals and the opportunities behind them. We'll share landlord stories, talk about maximizing investment potential, and discuss how to live the very best landlord life. This podcast is proudly brought to you by Furnished Finder, the place for everything midterm rentals. Remember to like and subscribe if you enjoy our content.
It's your host, Kelly Bailey of the Landlord Diaries, coming to you from the Austin, Texas area with a handful of midterm rentals. And I've got my midterm rental swag on today. You know how you go to those conferences and they're like, guys, let's get you all pumped up. We've had like a great morning session. Now stretch everybody and get ready. Here comes some t-shirts. So they threw some t-shirts and I was too far back because I'm a back rower. I don't like that front row. It's not my style. And somebody got one and it wasn't their size and they passed it over to me. So I'm so excited to be wearing my midterm rental t-shirt today.
I love conference t-shirts.
Yes.
Well, today we get to talk with Cindy. Cindy is an occupational therapist and her specialty is all about accessibility and making your home work for those people with different needs. Now she has a property of her own that she rents out as a short-term slash midterm, which is great because she's in the Myrtle Beach market. But she also, we have a really good conversation about some really simple, low-hanging fruit type of items that you can do to make your property just a little bit more accessible, because there's a lot of people with different needs that are also looking for rental properties. So there's some really good takeaways here, and I think you're all going to enjoy it.
Today we talk with Cindy Caldwell, an out-of-state investor who lives in Philadelphia and has a short-term midterm rental in North Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. Cindy has 30 years of experience in healthcare as an occupational therapist with a specialty in home modifications. We will focus today's episode on three parts: the short-term midterm condo in South Carolina, Cindy's experience with KeyCheck, and analyzing your home for guests with accessibility needs. Cindy, it's such a pleasure to have you today. How are you?
I'm good. How are you? Thanks for having me.
I am doing great. And yes, we just feel so blessed to tell all of our landlord stories because we all do it differently and we learn along the way, we grow along the way, and we help each other. So first question, we're going to start by talking about the North Myrtle Beach, South Carolina property. Why did you choose that area since you live in Philadelphia as your investment location?
Well, we had grown to love it over the years. Our daughter has, she currently plays college softball, but over the years she played tournament ball, and often we would travel down to Myrtle Beach area in general to play the end of the year tournaments, the big tournaments down in the summer in July. So we did that for about 5 years in a row and just kind of each year grew to love the area more and more. I mean, we're used to the Jersey Shore up here. Is our go-to. And that was another reason. The Jersey Shore, you know, as you get more up, more further north, the cost just increases in terms of property values. So another reason down in the Myrtle Beach area, it was more reasonable for us to, you know, purchase a second home.
Okay, awesome. And from a previous conversation, you self-managed this property and you found it through a realtor. So why don't you go ahead and tell us about this specific condo, why you chose this one, and you know what all's covered with the HOA?
Sure. We have a two-bedroom, two-bath condo in Barefoot Resorts and Golf, which is just west of 17 down on Myrtle is like the main drag. So we are west of that from the beach. And it's a large, I mean, I think it's about 24 acres property. And there's four golf courses. So it's very large, a lot of different. They have all different. They have condos and single homes and townhomes available. We decided on the two-bedroom, two-bath condo. And it's just a three-story building. But yeah, we definitely love the area, and it has a lot of great amenities. Where it's only about 2 miles of a drive to the beach. But we have the HOA gives, you know, they take care of the pools. We have a small pool and then a very large pool. There's, you know, volleyball, tennis courts, just a lot of different amenities in the property itself. And that's very close to shops and restaurants right across the Intercoastal Waterway. So it gave a lot of different amenities to people and to ourselves as well. We enjoy going down there a couple times a year.
And this is a property that you bought specifically as an investment property, correct?
Yes, yes. I mean, we really wanted to use it as well as a vacation property because we enjoy going down there. But definitely, we go twice a year, probably about a week each time. And otherwise, we rent it out short-term and midterm.
Okay, so you do kind of the mix, which I know a lot of our landlords on Furnished Finder do, and they find it really great, especially for seasonal places like Myrtle Beach. So tell us a little bit about how you either intentionally or unintentionally ended up doing a mix of short-term and midterm, and how that helps you manage the seasonality.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. I mean, the initial thought was the short-term rental. That's where I had most of my education. I would listen to so many podcasts and look at different websites and read books about short-term rentals. And I think a lot of people initially look at it that way too, because you have the higher profit because you're renting on a nightly basis versus a monthly basis per se. But that's all mixed kind of nowadays anyway. People do rent longer. But I think because the summer is so strong, just like in any beach community, the summer is, you know, anywhere from like May through August. August starts to get a little quiet just because people are going back to school and the families aren't as much on vacation. But then when you get into the fall and the winter season, traditionally it was really snowbirds. You would think of, you know, people coming down that are retired, you know, coming down from the colder regions. I think Myrtle Beach area is very strong in Canadian residents, some, you know, Northeast residences of America as well. But that I have found, especially last fall, that it was really great. We had two physical therapists who had, you know, the traveling healthcare people have like 13 week assignments traditionally. And then a lot of times they may extend as well for a month or so their contracts. So it really just ties in that gap really nicely of the fall and the winter. And you know, we do enjoy having people that we call the snowbirds. I hate to label it, but that's how everybody knows it. You know, most of the time we found that they were doing about a month or two at most in our area. So I may even gravitate more towards the healthcare professionals taking care of at least 3 months at a time.
You're posing a new question here. You triggered my mind to Canadians. Canadians don't typically have social security numbers. So have you had any Canadian midterm rental guests that you've needed to run background checks on and haven't been able to? And if yes, how did you go about vetting that they were a good tenant?
Today's episode is proudly sponsored by Furnished Finder, the ultimate platform for hassle-free midterm rentals. Whether you're a seasoned landlord or just getting started, Furnished Finder is the place for you. With Furnished Finder, you can say goodbye to booking fees and hello to direct bookings for 30-day plus days. It's a win-win for everyone involved. So if you're ready to experience the joys of midterm renting and take a load off your landlord's shoulders, head over to furnishedfinder.com today. We make it easy to get started. We're grateful to Furnished Finder for sponsoring this episode, and we're sure you'll love what they have in store for you.
Well, actually, no, the snowbird rentals were more towards the other other platforms.
Okay. Okay. More short term.
Yeah. Yeah. And more of the short term. The midterm rentals where it was the physical therapist and now there's a nurse currently in there that started August 1st. They were strictly right through Furnished Finders.
And that's another good point that everyone needs to be aware of and remember is you can absolutely list your property on multiple platforms. Like that's okay. And that's great. And it's good to, you know, keep all your avenues open. One thing that we're really passionate at Furnished Finder is letting the landlords run your business how you want to run it, right? That's why we don't get in the middle of transactions. You know, we don't take booking fees. It's really, we want to create the power of connection and relationships. So however each property and each landlord needs to do that is great. So I think that's great that you're, you know, finding tenants in multiple ways.
Yeah, for sure. Let's get into the logistics of operating both a short-term and mid-term property. So we've already broken down the short-term for you is typically around May to August, and mid-term's typically around September to April. So that would be 4 months of short-term and 8 months of mid-term. And I really love how clear you are with your headline on Furnish Finder. I'm going to give you an example of her property's headline. It says, Healthcare Travelers Retreat, Monthly Rental September through April. I just think that is a beautiful headline and paints the picture very clearly for anyone searching in advance or last minute that might think, oh, this isn't going to be available. So great job there. How do you compare the profit between the short-term months and the mid-term months to lead to the decisions that you've made?
Really, it wasn't necessarily, I mean, yes, there's a difference in profit. Of course, you know, the short term, you're going to make a higher profit, but then you also have more work to do as well. So it's all kind of relative. You know, we have a 3-night minimum in the short term rental space. And that can be also be dictated by your HOA. Our HOA doesn't dictate a certain time, but I just picked 3 nights just to avoid the weekend parties. Kind of thing. That was my main thing. I figured if someone's willing to take a day off of work, then they're a little more serious of a client than just a weekender. But I'm sorry, what was their question again? The profit margin.
Yeah.
Yes, that's it. It came back. Like I said, you definitely do make less per month in the midterm rental. And then, you know, if you extended it out to long-term rental, that's even less. But it's less daily work for the midterm rental, which is as appealing. My cleaner, I have her go in once a month versus every 3 days, every 5 days, 7 days. So that cost, you know, is incurred as well, the cleaning fees. And then there's less wear and tear, because I find as well is the healthcare professional, they're working all day. Even nurses are working long hours. They could be working 12-hour shifts. And they're coming home probably exhausted, and they're just kind of chilling out, resting, maybe making dinner, whatever. So it's not like a vacation property where they're going to the beach every day and bringing, you know. But the profit margin, it is relative, but I it's appealing to me to have the midterm rentals.
Well, and the midterm rentals gives you a little bit of a break, right? So you can have the seasonality of a place like Myrtle Beach, and you can take those high profits from the high season, but then you can go, okay, now I get to breathe. I have someone in there for 3 months or 6 months or however long, and you get to kind of step back a little bit. I feel like that makes the higher turnovers and the little bit, you know, it's a lot more involved to have a short-term rental. Makes it a little bit easier of a pill to swallow when you know, okay, come August, we're going to switch this to midterm and I'm going to get to relax a little bit. So I think that's great.
Yeah, for sure. And Cindy and I have had a previous conversation, so we can dive into it a little further. In her best months, it ranges for short term between $4,000 and $7,000 monthly revenue. She has around $1,550 in expenses due to some HOA increases and insurance increases. So that, you know, leaves a pretty good profit during her short term rental months. Profit net income around $5,450 if she's closer to that $7,000 per month revenue. And then on the midterm rental side, she rents it out now for, due to, you know, inflation and same idea, HOA, increases, insurance increases. She rents her midterm rental for $1,960. So $1,960 per month, expenses around $1,450. And, that gives her around a $500 per month profit or net income for off season. So let's look at that. If we were looking at off season, making that $1,960 in revenue, if before you discovered midterm rentals in off season, what was like, do you remember if like there was an average of what, how many nights were being booked on the short term side that led to the midterm rental decision there?
Well, we weren't really getting much short term in the fall and in the winter months. We were sometimes like the first year we were pretty quiet in the fall, which kind of led us to, you know, we're just wanted to research what are some of the other options that are available. So I always knew about Furnished Finders. So I was kind of on that space from the beginning or close to the beginning. But yeah, I had done so much research prior. When I did home care, I would just listen to all the podcasts and everything in between patients instead of listening to the radio.
Awesome.
So I would just learn that way. And so, yeah, after that first fall, because we bought it in May of 21 and started renting July of 21.
Okay.
So within that first fall, I, you know, quickly realized we needed to switch gears and get some longer rentals in.
Yeah. Sounds like you have a great strategy in place that gives you peace of mind and maximizes the profit as well.
Hey, landlords, are you ready to level up your rental game and simplify your life? Well, get ready to meet your new best friend, KeyCheck. KeyCheck is your all-in-one solution for stress-free property management with tenant-paid screenings, rent payment processing, online lease creation with eSign, and a suite of incredible landlord tools. You'll wonder how you ever lived without it. No more chasing down checks or sifting through piles of applications. KeyCheck helps you organize and manage all things landlording in a simple and efficient way. So if you're tired of the rental chaos and crave seamless, efficient management, head over to keycheck.com and sign up today. Make landlord life a breeze with KeyCheck, the game changer for modern property owners.
All right. Well, it is time to transition to our second part of the conversation, which is KeyCheck. And for those of you that aren't familiar with KeyCheck, it is a Furnished Finder's sister site and is your go-to place for midterm rental landlord tools. We have tenant screenings, leases with e-signature, and rent payments available so that when someone says, I'm ready to move forward, you don't have to go hire a realtor or figure it out. We have all the tools available for you on our sister site, KeyCheck, and the tenant screening and rent payments are both free to the landlord, and the leases you purchase, and they are state specific, and you just answer a series of questions, which is really nice, and it generates this professional document that's been, you know, approved at each state level. And Cindy happens to use our tools and said it was such an easy, nice balance for her. So I just wanted to give you the opportunity, Cindy, to kind of give everyone your walkthrough of how you utilize KeyCheck when someone says, okay, I'm ready to move forward.
Oh, definitely. Anything that makes my life easy is I'm all for it. I will pay for it. And it's not even expensive. So like, it was a win-win. This was our first investment property. So, you know, you're learning as you go as well. And I was kind of like, how am I going to, you know, generate a lease and all that? Because I was on other platforms that just did it all for you. So that was a big question for me. And I looked into the KeyCheck and it was just seamless. It was just like, you know, you just put your state, you put your address, and then it generates everything specific to that state's laws and, you know, real estate laws. And you just fill it in. It takes you through very easily. And you just add things, or if you don't want something in there. But I kept all of, you know, because that's the reason I'm doing is because I don't know what the laws are for that state in every detail, like a lawyer for per se.
And so you use the tenant screening, you use the leases, do you use the rent payments as well?
Oh yes. Yes.
Okay.
We use it through Stripe.
Yeah.
Yes. We had used that, for the rent payments. It was really easy. And they, you know, the landlord doesn't have to pay the fee. It's the renter that pays the fee on the renting end.
Awesome. So on the setup side, how was it for you setting up the rent payments, for your tenants? And then did you have to make any modifications, or was it pretty straightforward?
It was pretty straightforward. I just asked you for all the information that you would expect, your name, address, all that, your contact information, your bank account information, so that the payment can go, straight through. And then you set it all up of what the payments would be. And then your renter will get an email to set up their own account. And then it kind of goes through there. So it's very seamless. They just have to communicate through the email that comes from Stripe.
You guys, I've used KeyCheck with a couple of properties lately, and I've gotten such good feedback from the tenants themselves, one of which was a corporate housing provider. So they have dealt with all sorts of different payment and lease systems. And they were like, one of them told me that they really appreciated the simplicity. And I was like, yeah, same. So KeyCheck, it has everything you need, but it's not like overly complicated. It's very user-friendly. You haven't checked it out, like, I definitely encourage you to check it out as a landlord. So, okay, Cindy, let's transition to Kelly. Got me really excited for this conversation because of talks about accessibility and making sure that your home is ready for tenants with all sorts of different needs. So first I want to backtrack a little bit. Tell us a little bit more about your background and why you know so much about this, why it's important to you, and kind of how you ended up here as our specialist.
Well, as you had said in the beginning, I'm an occupational therapist for the past 30 years. I graduated in 92 from Jefferson University. So it's been quite some time. And 25 of those years were in home care until this past year. So I loved home care. I loved being in the patients' houses and, being able to go around in the community. And I also have a specialty in home modification. So it's home accessibility, all the different types of things that people would need to be more accessible to get in and out of their home or throughout their home. And in occupational therapy, we really work on function, how to, whether it's, cognitive, visual skills, balance, what have you. We have a strong array of, really boiling it down to the function of how somebody can function in their home. And it's a very practical, profession that way. So I equated it, that was my interest, is when we were getting into the rentals, is the accessible rentals. And I had hooked up, and I know that we were talking about an organization called Becoming Rentable that I've connected with, who are a listing site for accessible properties. And we go on and verify there are different features that are accessible in their property. It doesn't mean that they have to have certain features. It just really validates what they do have and list, what accessibility features they have. So,
and fun fact, thanks to Cindy, I've connected with the founder of Becoming Rentable, Lorraine Woodward, and she's an amazing woman as well. And both are hosts on Furnish Finder. But yeah, they really want to make sure that travelers have an easy way to search for homes that have been verified and proven accessible. So I can't wait for some of the tips that you're going to share with our, landlords today to hopefully help them become more confident in what their home has to offer and maybe help increase the volume of accessible homes on Furnish Finder. So first off, let's break down the types of accessibility needs. What all types of needs are out there?
Well, I think what everybody really initially thinks of is the wheelchair needs, the mobility needs, which are there, definitely. I think that's just what everybody thinks of the most, where, do you have a ramp? Do you have an elevator? Things like that. But it's not just the physical disabilities. It could be somebody with visual disabilities, hearing impairments, cognitive disabilities, whether it could be someone with dementia or it could be cognitive issues with children with special needs. It could be a child with autism. So there's many different accessibility needs in the population, not just, do you have a ramp, an elevator, the doorways, which they are all important as well. Door width, a lot of times it's really how the pictures, they may have an accessible feature, but they just might not be featuring it well in their pictures, and everything's about the pictures. So sometimes, you know, they'll recommend that, you know, when you do take a picture of your doorways, you know, have a measuring tape. So in the picture, you can actually see how, you know, is it 32 or 36? Sometimes on the angle, you may not be able to tell based on the picture.
Yeah, that's a good point. Excellent.
Yeah, or even the shower, like they have, you know, they might have a nice step-in shower or even a roll-in shower. And they say it's roll-in, but we can't verify unless I can see the floor of where that transition is. So people will have a picture of their shower or closed with the curtain, which is no, open the curtain, let somebody see, but also let that person see the transition from the bathroom floor into the shower so they can be prepared. It's really about, you know, the information you show through your pictures is so important.
So essentially what you're saying is if you do have accessibility features in your property, which are so valuable to someone who needs specific things like that, make sure that you're showing them in your photos, right?
Oh, definitely.
So, yeah.
And it could be even, it doesn't even really necessarily have to be like a traditional accessibility for somebody with a disability. It could be a universal design kind of mentality too, where if you have a ramp or an elevator, that's going to help, you know, a person in a wheelchair, but it's also going to help a mom with a stroller. It's going to, you know, it's going to help. Universal design principles are so nice for many different reasons.
Yeah. That's a really good point.
For sure.
Yeah.
I have a couple of examples to pull from just from my own hosting experiences. So I'm the first to say I am not great at knowing if my homes are very accessible or not. So that's one of the reasons I was so excited to have Cindy on the show to help improve all of our knowledge of how, like, little things we can do to make our homes more accessible. But when I think through each of my houses, I have two that would be considered likely accessible for, you know, some medical travelers or those in need, like certain needs. So, our Belton property, we've had a traveling medical family there for almost 2 years now. So I don't have much to pull from there, but for our, yellow house in Georgetown, the backyard is, it's one of those walkout houses where it's at the ground level until you start going towards the back of the house. Then you have this beautiful patio that overlooks kind of like a green space. It gives it kind of a tropical feel with the second floor patio. And then there's stairs that go down to the backyard. So everything is accessible in the home except for the backyard. Now the front door has stairs, so they would not go that way. But most people, because the front door is on the right side and not really convenient, most people enter through the garage. And we just had one barrier in the garage, which was a small step from the garage into the laundry room. So our first guest, he had one of those cool knee wheelchairs where he had one leg was moving and the other one was propped up, and they were such a sweet family. And that was an elder brother. So it was an older family and he just travels with them. He was probably a little older than all of us. It was a great setup for them. And then my second one to pull from was recently we had a medical, a surgery, like a traveler that had a surgical need. I didn't get personal and ask what it was for. And they had the potential of needing a wheelchair, but we didn't have a ramp. So Dave and I got on Facebook. We started looking around. We're like, okay, how much do ramps cost? Could we build one? Dave started looking at how can I build one? I started looking at how can I find one? So I went online, started finding, you know, what was available on Facebook, and there was a ton of options ranging anywhere from $20 up to, you know, $200 or $300. So I found one that looked very durable and reliable, seemed to be the right setup for our space, for a car to still be able to park in the garage. It was about $60, and all that Dave had to do was screw it into the threshold of the door. And so it was a feature that was able to be removed or added as needed. And that allowed us to move forward with that booking and provide them a tranquil place to, you know, rest and recover after their surgery, versus them having to continue searching and finding something else, because we were willing to, you know, provide those slight modifications for a possible wheelchair. So what are some of those, Cindy, if we're going to start with furnishings, because that's probably the easiest modification for those getting started or, you know, making modifications to their home, oven accessibility or, you know, bed accessibility or, dining room table accessibility. What are some recommendations you have there?
Yeah, I mean, different things are popping in my head. Everything you mentioned, like even like the dining possibilities, a regular table, a regular height table versus the bar height table will be much better for somebody who might have mobility issues, like in a wheelchair or possibly couldn't get up that high to a bar height. So that is great, because I've looked at properties for becoming rentable where they, you know, they'll just have like a counter height at the kitchen area and then maybe a bar height table, because that was just more popular at the time. You know, there was just an influx of bar height tables, which they're great. But it doesn't work for somebody who might be in a wheelchair or of shorter stature or somebody that might struggle to get to the bar height. So that's a great feature that way. Furniture heights too is a lot of times, like if we were going to have an older couple or somebody that has trouble sitting from a low surface, not having really low couches or having an option of a couch or a chair that is firmer, so mm-hmm. somebody wouldn't have such a hard time. I mean, bed height can vary too. It really depends on if you're catering, if you're trying to make it wheelchair accessible type of place, and is somebody truly in a wheelchair, a lower bed height would be better to be able to transfer from a wheelchair height versus somebody who is maybe having a hard time getting off of a lower height and a higher bed. So it really, there's a lot of little factors to consider, and even having space under the bed versus just platform to the floor, because if somebody required a Hoyer lift to be able to, that has to be able to go under the bed. So it really kind of depends on the level of accessibility.
My father-in-law has Parkinson's, and we're, you know, which is a slow disease, but we're slowly needing to adapt his home. And for instance, when you said the beds, right? My husband and I just got a new mattress, and my father-in-law was like, "Oh, we need a new mattress. Let me try yours." And he lay down and he was like, "This thing is way too soft. I'd never be able to get out of it because of the Parkinson's." And I had never thought of that. So, and when you're talking about stuff, all sorts of different needs and how different needs need different things in homes, I can definitely relate to that, kind of just watching him go through his journey and what kind of adaptations they're needing to make in their house. But what I would love to hear is, okay, talk to Kelly and I as if we are, which we are, landlords who have very little, if any, intentional accessibility built into our properties, right?
Sure.
Some of mine have elevators, but it's just because they happen to have elevators, right? So talk to us and say, okay, let's say Kelly and I want to make our properties more accessible, but we don't know where to start.
And keeping in mind that we are mainly going to reach travelers that don't have those accessibility needs, but want to be able to be available for both.
Yeah, we want to be inclusive. But yes, most of the travelers that we have will, you know, have kind of their standard needs. But what are some things that we can easily integrate into our properties that would make it a little bit easier for someone with different needs?
Yeah, and just because the needs are so varied, it's hard. You're not gonna be there for everybody. So like, there's just so many specific things. But even just little things like having a nightlight so that it's safer for somebody to walk at night. Using, if somebody's sensitive or has sensory sensitivities, then having your cleaners use odor-free cleansers. so that there's not an overabundance of a smell. And a lot of times, like, you know, at home, I'll light candles and you have all these scented things, but you know, now you have renters coming in, you don't know if somebody's going to have a sensitivity to that. So maybe trying to use cleaners that are odor free so that so that's, it's good for everybody. It's more, I guess it comes like all that universal design type of a thing. Now, how can you, you know, have features for many people versus just your own personal types of things and thresholds for doors. That's a hard thing for sliding doors, you know, having like little threshold ramps, you know, things that are expensive.
I think like big picture for the bed, since we're saying, you know, it, everybody's going to have different needs, but we want to be able to offer comfortable bed to everyone. Then one option could be, and a lot of people, I'll have to tag on there the one that Sarah Weaver recommends. It's an Amazon bed that like a lot of people use. It's like $300 or $400.
It's like the green tea mattress.
Yeah. Yeah. But one thing that you can do is think through those big picture, like you're saying, leave a little space underneath in case they do have, you know, something that needs to go underneath for that accessibility. And that's also beneficial for storage, right? So it's like a win-win both ways. And then the mattress, you could get a firmer or medium to firm mattress and put a topper on it, like a memory foam topper that could be removed or replaced depending on whether they need it or not, because it doesn't take up too much space in the closet. So that would be an easy way to probably reach everyone's needs with a little bit of modification if they're like, it's too soft or it's too hard.
Okay. And then we have nightlights and we have odor-free products. What else? What are some other like low-hanging fruit things that people like Kelly and I could implement?
Well, even just door handles. A lot of times if having lever door handles is more of a universal design where it basically is it a handle that somebody with a closed fist could open? Because if you have somebody that has poor dexterity or hand strength, then you're opening it up, you know, to other people. But then also having an alarm, because if, you know, it's going to be easier for a child to open that door. But, you know, do you have an alarm system or an alternate lock for maybe a child that, you know, or even an adult that might have dementia, that they don't know how to undo the lock or can't get to it if it's in another type of thing. So that's another less expensive, like lever handles on faucets, easier to reach, things like that.
Mm-hmm. Easier for kids to escape, but also easier for elderly, like people that need to open it easier.
But that's something I would never think of, right? And what an easy, inexpensive change that you can make, just switching doorknobs.
And let's hone in just a little bit deeper on those doorways so that people can communicate correctly with their guests. You just 32 inches or 36 inches are the go-to, right? Is a 36 inch like a adult wheelchair and a 32 inch is a child's wheelchair? Like what are those numbers from?
Well, a 32 does fit a wheelchair, like just like a standard size wheelchair. And then it all depends, you know, if there's somebody that has an extra wide wheelchair, then you might run into issues with that. But, you know, a standard 32 is kind of what you really want to fit a walker, to fit any other devices through. 36 is ideal. Because then the person, if there is somebody in a wheelchair, they're not kind of hitting their hands. They have plenty of space to clear and they're not worried about, you know, hitting the doorway or catching their hand on the side type of thing.
Okay. Thresholds, y'all correct me if I'm wrong, but I think you can buy adjustable thresholds nowadays where you like lift them or lower them as needed. I might be wrong there, but it's like that could also help with gaps for the AC getting out and things as well. The last thing I want to make sure that we kind of understand better before we get into, I want us to look at the Furnish Finder. There's four things to check for accessibility on Furnish Finder. And I want you to like give us feedback on how to analyze those properly so we know what we're checking. But before we do, let's talk about those bathrooms a little more. For all of us that have like the standard tub shower combo, who would that be accessible for? Or are there little things you can do to make it like, is that still usable for needs people with an accessibility since that is a big remodel?
Sure. I mean, you can make it safer for somebody if they have a grab bar, you know, if they have something secure to hold on to and not the suction ones, please. As a therapist and married
to a carpenter. I'm guessing those are not very reliable, huh?
Yeah. As a therapist and married to a carpenter and doing all this, like, I like things in the stud, you know, screwed into the stud and secure. So grab bars are a great option. They also have, I mean, and I've always told my patients in home care this, if they didn't want to put holes in the wall, that was usually a big thing that they would say. They have clamp on tub rails to where they clamp on the side and tighten so that you could hold them stepping over and it doesn't do any damage, you know, to your tub. So that's another option. Shower chairs, shower benches. There's different options that you could have. You could even have like a shower bench that's, it's mounted into the wall, but it folds up so that, you know, you could be folded up for people who may not need it, but then it could also be, I mean, that could also be great for like women shaving legs.
Yeah. I mean, like, that's the first thing I think about.
it could be a good option for that, or, you know,
and they're trendy right now too, especially the foldable ones or the, you know, corner ones. People really like the benches in the showers nowadays.
You can make them. You can get very modern looking. You can get really nice grab bars that, you know, are very sleek. They even have I had surgery a few months back, and my husband put a grab bar in the shower downstairs for me, but it also had a built-in shelf with it. So that's where I would put the shower, you know, the shampoos and stuff like that. They have really nice looking ones next to the toilet. It's a toilet paper holder, but it is a real grab bar as well. And it looks very modern and sleek. So it doesn't have to look institutional, like you know, you're at like hospital, you know, setting type of thing.
Sure.
And the toilet height is a biggie too. You know, having the right height or ADA height, which you can get in, you know, the Home Depots, the improvement stores. It's just a lot higher.
Yeah, that's nice. The low ones, no one likes the low ones anyways. You're like, go and sit down, like, ah, that was much lower than I expected.
You feel like a little child. You're like,
yes, you do.
Yeah, when we first had our place, when we first got it, my husband was going to replace the toilets, but initially the first few months we didn't. And they were so low. Even my dad, who had both his knees done, he called me out. Well, he called me many times, but that's just my dad. But he'd be like, "Sin, I can barely get off the toilet." Sorry.
You're like, "Dad, that is a, yeah, we'll figure that out."
So, yeah, the toilet height is great thing to have. And then, you know, it's all new plumbing and something's not going to happen.
Yeah.
And that might just be, guys, when it comes time to replace the toilet,
mm-hmm. Yep.
Get a higher one, right? These can be small adaptations. This doesn't have to be, okay, let's all run out and completely remodel the properties right now. But it can be, okay, it's time to upgrade the shower. Let's add a couple of things. Or it's time to replace the toilet. Let's do this. Or, oh, we're going to put in an island. Let's think about what height we want in it. I think it's just something to be aware of at all times that honestly, it's never really been top of my mind. But it is something that I think is always good to have, you know,
sure,
just as a part of your thinking.
Let me add one thing to that. If you are not good at keeping up with your city regulations or city, you know, policies like I am, check with your city every once in a while, because Austin, when we went to do a remodel for our duplex, and we ended up having a water leak that we needed to address, they said, oh, well, there's actually rebates available if you convert your toilets to, what do they call it? Where it's more
the low flow or whatever.
Yeah. More efficient toilets. Yeah. And mm-hmm. all you have to do is like send in a receipt showing that you converted. And it was the same thing for the shower heads. It was like, if you converted them to be more water efficient, with mm-hmm. whatever standards that was, and zero scaping was one of them too, if you change your grass to zero scaping. So check with your cities every once in a while to see if there's things that you do, they might pay you to make those changes and be more accessible.
Love that. All right, Cindy. So I want to walk through when someone is listing their property on Furnish Finder or editing their property for that means. We have a few questions that we have about accessibility, and I want you to just talk about each one as far as what someone should consider if they say, yes, my property has this, or no, my property does not have this. So first, let's talk about wheelchair accessibility and wide hallways. What does someone need to have to be considered wheelchair accessible or to be considered wide hallways?
Well, I mean, the idea, like we were saying, is the 36-inch doorways is ideal. 32 is really the minimum is what you want to have. There's so many details because somebody could say, oh, we have a ramp, so we're wheelchair accessible, but the person can't get into the bathroom to relieve themselves or what have you. So there's so many details, like basically, like, can the person enter and exit at a wheelchair level, if that's what, you know, they're shooting for, to have wheelchair accessibility? Can they get from the car? Is the driveway gravel? Well, that's not going to work. Is it a hard surface driveway? Is there space for a wheelchair van to fit to get somebody off of there? And what is the entryway from where they get off? Basically, you're just taking it through. Right.
Taking yourself through.
Entry doors, the bathroom, the living room, the kitchen, you know, all the rooms that somebody, I mean, at minimum is bathroom and bedroom. You know, can they access the bedroom? Can they get around the room itself in a wheelchair between the furniture? Is it wide enough? And the bathroom is a big one because.
Is there a max threshold that you need to not have a ramp? Like, what is accessible for wheelchairs? Like, what's that height if they're going to go over something?
Usually a 2-inch. It should be under 2 inches if it's anything over 2 inches. But there, you could even have a threshold ramp for something that's 1 inch. I mean, there are threshold ramps that are small. They either are, you know, aluminum, or they could be a rubber, like a recycled tire material. So that could be removable as well and portable. So even a lot of times people just getting in and out of the slider doors on balconies, there's a couple inches because that whole mechanism on the floor is not technically accessible for somebody in a wheelchair, and it's difficult. It just makes it difficult.
Okay, so the other two things that we have listed, I think you've already covered, which are stairs at the entrance and or the inside of the property and disabled parking available. So you've talked about those. So I don't think we need to go further into those. But what I, the kind of like the grand lesson I'm learning from today is, A, we need to think about these details, implement small ones as we go. The other thing that I keep thinking about in the back of my mind is if you're out there and you have a property that checks these boxes, show it off, because that's a huge competitive advantage. So put that in your property title. And if you are in a position where you can really check those boxes, where you can say, yeah, I am wheelchair accessible, I do have wide hallways, or I have a great bathroom for someone in a wheelchair, call that out in your property description. Put some bullet points and say, I have a grip bar, I have a roll-in shower. And then, like you said earlier, Cindy, show those photos, because what a relief to someone who's looking for a specific property like that, where they go, oh, I don't have to ask all these questions. It's right here. And that's not going to deter someone who doesn't necessarily need those features, right? I think that's totally fine. We've all been in a hotel room that's the ADA hotel room, and I'm like, oh, look, I get a bigger shower. Great.
Yeah, I have all
this room. It's so nice. You're not going to deter anyone, but what you will do is you're going to put yourself at the front of the line for anyone who does have those specific needs. So shout it out and shout it from the rooftops if you have it.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. So if you have these features, show it in the picture, like show the floor, because when we're on, like on the Becoming Rentable, when we're verifying the properties, they might have the shower and I can pretty much guess what kind of shower they have. But if it says roll in, and what is the definition of roll in is another question. A lot of people misunderstand what does that mean. But if they have a roll-in shower, really, but they don't have a picture of it, I can't check it off. You didn't show me. I didn't see it. So I don't want somebody, I checked off, okay, I'm just taking their word for it that they had it, And then somebody goes and pays all this money to go on their vacation. And then what do? They get there and they're like, oh, I can't even shower. You know, so
that would be terrible.
Yeah. I mean, I always try to put myself in the person's position.
Yeah.
And I think there's so many, I have some like a statistic here from Becoming Rentable's website. They were saying that out of 1.3 million short-term rentals currently in the U.S., it's 0.002% are accessible.
Wow. That is not many.
And of the 0.002%, they are incorrectly labeled.
Wow.
Yeah. So there's such a need. Like they were saying, like there's obtainable market of $7.2 billion of people with accessibility needs. So I think it's such an untapped market just because they either don't know you have features that you may not even realize you have, or maybe little inexpensive changes could really open it up for you and you know, have a whole new population of people that could enjoy your place.
That is a great way to wrap up the episode. I am going to challenge each one of you listening. If you've listened to this, you've thought, this property of mine might fit those specifications. Well, go to edit listing on Furnish Finder. Start adding those details so that you can make it more forward for those that are looking for homes with accessibility needs. So, Cindy, we really appreciate you sharing everything about so many different aspects of your story. And if you want to connect with Cindy, you can leave her a comment on YouTube. In the show notes, you'll find the link to her property in North Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. It's such a tongue twister.
It is. It's long.
And we just appreciate you being here. Reminder, if you're loving our episode, please don't forget to like, subscribe, or comment. And we would love your 5-star reviews on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Have a great day, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you.